Hey, and welcome back to Joe on Joe. I'm your host, Joe Slepsky, and this is Joe on Joe, where we watch every episode of the G.I. Joe Real American Hero cartoon in sequential order, and we comment on it Mystery Science Theater style. We are here for the final episode of the first season of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. It is part two to the epic story, the epic personal saga, There Is No Place Like Springfield. And to get through this with me is my new friend. She's a writer. She works in animation. She works in comic books. She's worked in some live action. Her name is Joelle Selner. And welcome to Joe on Joe, Joelle.
Well, thank you.
I would like to officially rebrand this as Joe on Joelle. Or would you say Joelle on Joe?
Well, some of my friends call me Joe. So oh. It could be Joe on Joe with Joe.
Joe on Joe with Joe is welcome. Hey, and welcome back to Joe on Joe with Joe. And I'm your host, Joelle. No, I'm your host,
Joe.
And with me is Joelle. And we're talking about Joe.
Okay, so you can go by Joelle for the podcast so we don't get confused.
Joelle as a male name makes me feel like I'm from Krypton.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Which I like that a lot. I like that. That's really good.
I also get like the first Joelle during Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, welcome to my show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for being on it. I'm very excited to have you on because you are you're a writer working here in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You're very charming. We met at one of the comic conventions out here. And you have a new comic book coming out called Myrrh.
Yes.
Tell us about Myrrh.
Myrrh is sort of like Twilight, except with mermaids. It's a YA romance. And our main character, Erin, is a 16-year-old girl, and she just moves to Connecticut from the Midwest. And she's adjusting to her mom just died, and she's in a new school, and she meets this mysterious hot guy.
Don't we all meet a mysterious hot dudes, right?
That's what high school's about.
Oh, my goodness.
The new kid, she's a new kid, he's a new kid. But what she doesn't know is he is not from Atlanta, as him and his other friends will say. He is actually from Atlantis.
What? Scrackard scratch.
And he, in salt water, has gills.
So it's Twilight with gills.
Twilight with gills. Exactly.
I love that. It is the artwork is done by Abby Bow. Is it pronounced Bow?
I think so.
It's gorgeous.
It's a beautiful book.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. I was saying it's very reminiscent of anyone out there is reading books like Lumberjanes or the books that Boom's putting out. This is actually put out by Lionforge, which Lionforge is a very up-and-coming publisher. They were doing really cool stuff. They do the Knight Rider book.
Mm-hmm.
So fun.
And I worked on Saved by the Bell. And Punky Brewster
for the comics for Lionforge. Oh, yeah. You guys totally did. I forgot about that. Yeah, Punky Brewster comic. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a Punky Brewster comic out there. It looks amazing.
And
it reads even better.
It was very well received. So I would say if you have any, 8 to 10-year-old girls or you like reading stuff that's for 8 to 10-year-old girls, take a look at it. There's a lot of fun to work on.
Yeah, this is obviously with the movies Twilight and all that stuff, it's nothing. The YA like female audience is nothing new under the sun these days. But I would say from a comic book perspective, it's been growing in the last couple of years, and it's been really good. Like it's really been booming. So it's great to see another really good looking addition to it. And I've not had a chance to read it yet, but I guarantee you, I'm sure it's wonderful.
And I love working in this space too.
And the reason I haven't had a chance to read it is because it just launched this week. This is the first time mm-hmm. I've seen a copy of it. So it dropped on April 19th.
Yes.
Where can we get copies of it? Your local comic shop?
Your local comic shop and online, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com.
Loyal Joe and Joe listeners know that I work at Golden Apple Comics out here, and we are scheduled to have a signing with you, correct?
I believe so.
Awesome. Look forward to that.
April 30th.
Yes.
Next Sunday.
Next Sunday. That's the week before Free Comic Book Day. Are you doing anything for Free Comic Book Day?
I am not.
Oh, well, you should come by Golden Apple Comics if you're looking for something fun.
I love free comic books.
And two, if any listeners are in the LA area, you need to come by on April 30th to Golden Apple. We're at Melrose and La Brea, and meet Joelle and get a copy of Myrrh and get it autographed, and you're going to love it. It's a directive, by the way. It's like a cold slither, subconscious. Like, that's what you're going to do if you're within the sound of my voice.
Yes, please come, because I will be very sad sitting there with nobody.
No. There's going to be... What's really great about signings, especially in your hometown, is that there's... your friends and family always show up, mm-hmm. and some of the smaller press books, it's always a good time, mm-hmm. because we always have a lot of fun. Some of the bigger signings, we've had, like, we've, you know, sometimes you get like crazy huge people.
Yeah,
gigantic. Yeah. And like store. They're exciting and they're action packed and there's always something crazy, but they're so informal, mm-hmm. because the people come in, they've got their people with them, and you never have time to sit down and chat with them. As a fan, it's usually rush in, rush out. When we have the smaller press stuff, we love doing those a little bit more because it's more relaxed. You can talk to the people. You can find out what, you know, the creative process, mm-hmm. you know, how did you get started in comics? How did you, you know, which is actually the question I'm going to ask you. How did you get started in comic books?
I had been working in animation for a couple years, and I had a good friend from high school who had been an editor at DC and Dark Horse. And he was always telling me, like, oh, you should do comics. And we love to have animation people write comics. And I was working a full-time job.
Who is that friend, by the way? At that time. Give him a name.
Rob Simpson.
I know that name. I know that name from his Dark Horse stuff.
Yes, he's fantastic. He's at Blizzard now doing fantastic stuff over there. Love him to death.
Awesome. Hey, Rob. Shout out.
Hey, Rob. I'm going to tell you to listen to this.
Yeah. One more download.
So I parted ways with my advertising job.
Okay.
Probably a win-win for both sides. And I suddenly had no income. And it was 2008. So nobody had any income.
Nobody had income.
And I wasn't getting freelance. I wasn't doing anything. I was like, wow, this is a great time to start doing other types of writing. So I was talking to Rob and I was like, hey, you know, do you have any contacts you can hook me up with? And through a roundabout way, I talked to the editor at DC who was doing Secret Saturdays comics for their Cartoon Network Action Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just written an episode of Secret Saturdays.
Perfect.
So after, you know, a couple pitches and everything, I ended up doing two stories for them.
It's great.
And that was, you know, starting off at DC Comics. You can't beat that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good first footprint into the comic industry. But you had already been writing animation. You've worked on, so we said, Secret Saturdays. You've worked on Teen Titans. Is that now Teen Titans Go?
No, I worked on it before it was Go. Okay,
which was so successful they brought it back as Go. Mm. So congrats on that. Yeah.
Thank you.
I love seeing the success of that show. You've written on Puffy AmiYumi, Sonic the Hedgehog. Not the Mighty Avengers. Which iteration of the Avengers are we on?
Earth's Mightiest Heroes,
which was such a good show.
I loved that show.
It had continuity. It had deep Marvel lore to it. I checked IMDb. You did the Captain Marvel, the Kree episode, right?
Yeah, I introduced Ms. Marvel.
Fantastic.
Was just a wonderful experience to have.
Yeah, that's great.
And working under the amazing Chris Yost. Shout out to Chris for giving me the opportunity. And
that means you have to tell Chris to listen to my podcast now.
Going on to the amazing success of writing all the Thor movies.
Yeah. Well, he's super talented from his animation stuff.
Right.
And then, he's awesome.
Yeah, he did a lot of Marvel animation.
Yeah.
And still works in comics and was just, you know, so amazing to learn. I wasn't that familiar with the Marvel universe, and just like to learn from him was awesome.
Very cool. Now you wrote on Ben 10 as well, and that was a Secret Saturdays crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What'd you like about that?
It was just really fun to just play in both worlds, and to have Ben 10, which is such a great universe, interacting with the Secret Saturdays characters,
mm-hmm.
and we had just a really fun storyline. And
you worked on Monster High.
Mm-hmm.
I have three nieces, and they all went through their Monster High phase. They loved Monster High. And I really liked, as an adult, buying the presents. getting the Monster High stuff because it was cool. Like, I was like, oh, this is kind of a neat, you know, this Frankenstein daughter or, you know, mummy daughter, or mummy, you know, werewolf, whatever. Oh, what was your experience on Monster High?
It was really fun. And I did, I think, like 4 or 5 webisodes. And they have a great team at Mattel. It's just so cool that it's such a popular franchise. It's nice, you know, whenever you're working with a toy brand, you always have to be like very protective of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of adds like another layer of work to it. But, it's a fun property, and I love doing, you know, work for little girls and, you know, empowering characters for little girls. I also just did Lego DC Superhero Girls.
I was going to mention that next. Yes.
And that's kind of like it's a similar really thing cool. Yeah. Where I was such a Wonder Woman fan growing up. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I am writing dialogue for Wonder Woman right now. Like, little fangirl in me was just going crazy.
That's awesome. It's very important. Obviously, this is not the show to go on about, you know, feminism and female empowerment in society today. But if you got your ears open, you know that that's what's happening. That's what's been happening for a couple of years, and now more so than ever. So to have people like you on the front lines, and by front lines, I mean you're speaking to the daughters who will be the women of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're speaking directly to the women who in 8 to 10 years will be voting with their, you know, with their vote in their wallet. So to drive that, you are a cornerstone of the things that they're going to think about when they're influencing society in a really real way. So that's very important.
Yeah. And even when I was writing Myr, I was very conscious of the things I didn't like about Twilight, about how passive the lead character was. And I was like, I'm going to make my lead character just really assertive and care about other things besides her boyfriend.
Here's what I didn't like about Twilight. Why would vampires go to high school?
That's like a good point. You would think that they would
if
know
I'm
everything.
An immortal vampire, the last thing I'm doing is hanging out in high school. I might hang out by the park to hang out with high schoolers, but to actually go to high school, not happening.
But great place to meet underage girls, I suppose.
Well, if you're 300 years old. But everyone's underage to a vampire. So G.I. Joe is why we're here. G.I. Joe is what brings this congregation together every week. You expressed to me you've never seen an episode of Joe.
I never did. Big disclaimer. So
that's okay. You're not the first.
I know two things about G.I. Joe besides what you were explaining to me. But coming into this, he is a soldier. Or in my mind, he was a soldier.
Right.
Not a guy who lives in the gastrointestinal tract.
Okay.
Named Joe.
Yeah. So it's gastrointestinal Joe. Yeah. 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 That's what they called me.
That was my ulcers.
That was my nickname in high school. Gastrointestinal Joe. But go on.
And he's got Kung Fu Grip.
Kung Fu Grip.
And that is literally. And
well, sometimes that's all that's needed to take down Cobra.
And there is something called Cobra who he is either with or against.
He is against Cobra. Against Cobra. What was your cartoon jam growing up? Like, what did you really, really cherish as a kid?
I was big into Super Friends.
Love it.
Love Super
which,
Friends.
Do you remember which iteration? Because there were like 5 different versions. Like, do you remember? Like, because there were the Wonder.
It had
there were,
Gleek.
There were Wendy and Marvin. Oh, so Gleek. So the Gleek. Wonder Twins.
Mm-hmm.
So Zan and Jaina.
Yes.
Awesome. That was probably the best era. Because after that, they did like the Super Powers Force, which was a little more Kirby influenced.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like was a little more serious, but not as much fun. Like Zan and Jane are great.
Mm-hmm. I have a hard time remembering like what decade I was watching things because, you know, they were showing Flintstones. I mean,
yeah,
Flintstones were from the 60s, but I watched a ton of Flintstones.
I was born in 75. And so like, you know, I remember watching stuff in like 81, 82.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching The Monkees and Batman 66 every day thinking that they were new shows.
Oh, they were new to me.
Yeah. They were both from 1966. And mm-hmm. I had absolutely no idea. I was like, I need my next episode of The Monkees.
I watched I think every Bugs Bunny. I watched like every Looney Tunes. I had no idea that they were from the 50s or the 60s right. or what. It was new to me. It was
Was there like a childhood passion for animation that drew you to write for animation? Or
I always preferred cartoons over live action.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when you grow up in New York, you're kind of removed from the entertainment industry. So I had no idea that writing for animation was even a job you could pursue. So it wasn't until I moved out here to pursue sitcom writing that I learned, oh, there are people who actually write for animation. And how fun would that be?
Well, congratulations on turning fun into a career. That's really great and very hard to do.
It is a job with all the constraints of actually, working for a living. But I don't even feel like it's work half the time. It's like I get to just play with these franchises.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun.
Well, that's living the dream. And I'm going to put you to work now as we watch part two of There's No Place Like Springfield. So we watched the recap. So
And this is not a Simpsons crossover.
No.
You got me all confused with Springfield.
No. I'll explain Springfield once the show goes.
But this would be a cool Simpsons crossover.
This would be an amazing Simpsons crossover. So we're going to get into it. Joel Selner, we can reach you at your website, which is writtenbyjoelle, joelle.com. And we can find you on Twitter at whereisjoelle. Find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Joe on Joe Pod. And if you're out there and you want to be a guest on the show, or you just want to send me a note, say the show's amazing, or you want to send me even better, send me a note and say this show's terrible, write to joeonjoepod@gmail.com. Let me know your thoughts.
Or never have that girl on again who's never even watched a G.I. Joe episode.
Well, if they literally said those words, then my wife would never be on again. If you're on iTunes, leave me a review. Or if you're on Stitcher or wherever you're getting your podcast, if there's a review section, leave me a review, good or bad. Any attention is great, because then the powers that be see it and they see that the show's getting a lot of traction. Yeah, it means there's a lot of fans listening and telling their friends and just sharing it. And we've been getting great feedback. And I love it because it's a great community. The G.I. Joe community out there is really awesome. So welcome to it, Joelle. You are now a part of it. So let's get going.
Okay.
With part two of There Is No Place Like Springfield. So love the opening to G.I. Joe. This is the last time that we're going to see this opening, Joelle. They changed the opening starting next episode. So this is the last time we get to see shirtless Quick Kick throw one of the Zaymot twins off the giant Cobra snake ship. Have you ever... So working in animation... Have you ever been involved in a show like where they're building it, like at this point where they're figuring out like what do we want the opening animation to look like, have you come in kind of once the show's established?
As a freelancer, I usually come in, in the middle of a season, and there's something called like a show bible, where even if the show hasn't aired, so you can get a sense of what they're looking for.
Right.
Episodes. I'm developing a show right now, but the opening animation, that's more of a director thing.
Yeah.
I think as a writer.
So the writers don't usually have a lot of input into it. Well, we're going to go into the recap. Jay
undertook a daring mission to rescue Professor Mulaney, a scientist on the run from Cobra.
Your message said Cobra kidnapped you and forced you to work on a new secret weapon.
And Joel, for the record, Professor Mulaney looks like he's been on the run from Cobra for like 100 years.
I want to know like what bit his arm that he has a hole like over his shoulder. Like clothes don't just decay that way.
He is so disheveled.
Yeah, he's on his way to an episode of Naked and Afraid.
Pretty much.
Cobra doesn't know what it is.
His beard is so long. His hair is so long. Cobra's either terrible at finding him, or he's been on just... That's important. Shipwreck got a secret implanted in his brain. Lady J is the only one with the code. Then the action starts again. He's pretty spry running away from the missiles, though.
Yeah, really.
So part one of this, I think, was a really successful horror movie. It was definitely about, you know, like the other. It was about Shipwreck being, you know, caught off guard, you know, not being comfortable where he was at, you know, when he was living in Springfield.
Shipwreck awoke in the hospital to learn.
The turn that Steve Gerber did with this episode, which I think is so brilliant, is it's not a horror movie anymore. Now it actually becomes it's a little more straightforward adventure, escape and adventure. But we talked a little bit about like They Live being a kind of a
Shipwreck didn't remember that either.
Template for the first episode. This one's a little more like Escape from New York, where Shipwreck's Snake Plissken inside New York. The New York is Springfield, you know, and he's got to figure out how to get out.
Oh, wow.
You know, so to use another John Carpenter's reference. Also, I want to, in the corrections department, I didn't point out that the goo that we're talking about here in the recap, those are synthoids, which was one of the other great two-parters called the Synthoid Conspiracy, where Cobra made these synthoids and they replaced all the generals that ran G.I. Joe. Mm. So they showed up and they were like, G.I. Joe's disbanded, you know, like you guys are all obsolete, you're done. And they shut down G.I. Joe. And it was just a handful of Joes that rebelled and were able to figure out what it was. So that's another amazing thing that Steve Gerber did here, is he used the continuity that they had established earlier in the cartoons, which I don't think is very... It's a rare cartoon, I think, that uses that kind of previous season continuity.
Mm-hmm.
You guys did, obviously, in Avengers.
Right.
That was a very continuity-heavy show, which is one of the reasons I loved it so much. But I think a lot of the animation, not a lot of continuity from... episode to episode, correct?
It depends on how the show is set up. There are story editors that will map out the entire season arc, and then you're assigned, like, you do episode 10 in this arc, and these are the things that are going to happen. And then some story editors just take pitches. Like, do you have a cool idea for the show? Let's do it. And there's no, like, sometimes it fits within a structured arc, and sometimes it's just... you're just doing a standalone episode.
Cool.
And then if you're going in like that, there's no overarching vision.
We'll be ready when he arrives. You'd better go make your report.
If something happened 9 episodes earlier, you don't see it because it's not on the air, because it takes 2 years to animate something.
Oh, yeah.
So you're kind of fiddling around. And
is there, in animation, you're all in TV, you hear all about the writer's rooms. Are there writer's rooms in animation, or is it so individualized? Like you come in, you're a gun fired, you know, freelance, do an episode, someone else does another episode, or do they ever get you all the freelancers in a room and say, this is what we're doing?
It depends on the show. Most animated shows don't have staffs. I know Nickelodeon and Disney do have staffs, and you do have the room experience. Typically on a lot of the freelance shows, we'll have a kickoff where all the freelancers are together and we're spitballing ideas for the season. And then we all go off and really just interact with the story editor, who's our showrunner. We call them story editors.
Now, do you work exclusively like from home? Or do you ever go back in the offices again after that? Or is it just all you working on your own?
On some shows, I'll go in for a notes meeting, like after I've submitted a script. Or we'll go in after I do my premise. I'll go in and meet with the story editor to just break the story and do the outline. And then I go back home. But I've never, like... Some of my friends like have offices at Warner Brothers. Like, I've never had like an office outside my home.
So you said 2 years to get on air for animation, right?
It takes a while. Yeah. Some shows have a faster pipeline.
Comic books also usually take a little while. How long did Murr take from start to finish?
Murr took a real long time. I think I wrote it 3 years ago.
Wow.
A journey into your
and
mind.
Is that whole time just production or? California. Where you grew up. You know, just the whole process of you wrote it, then you had to find a publisher, then you had to find an artist.
Yeah,
or is it?
I was commissioned by Lion Forge.
Oh, you were? Great.
And it was one of the first things that I think this was the first graphic novel I wrote.
16. I lied about my age.
They were just starting out, and I did a pass, and we didn't have an editor. So I just sort of said, well, this would make a cool graphic novel. And not having a lot of comics experience, I really needed an editor. So then they brought an editor, the amazing Adam Staffaroni, on board.
Shout out to Adam Staffaroni. Another download. Adam, you're going to have to hear.
Adam is amazing. I worked with him on Punky and Saved by the Bell. And he read it and he said, you know, I think we can do better. So then I rewrote it.
That's great.
It's great. Editorial supervision. Yeah, it's great. Which helped a lot and made it a much better story.
Yeah, great that you were open to that. Yeah.
I'm always open to that. Because I'm not native to comics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming into it from a very
what seems to be the problem,
active
doctor?
Medium.
She's an experience. The full power of a chamber.
A static medium.
Sure.
So there's the sequential storytelling is a skill that I didn't
definitely
come to it.
Real quick on the show, the Crimson Twins just introduced this really cool character, Cadet Demi, which I don't know that we've ever revisit, but it's a female Crimson Guard trainee who is using the brainwash devices on Shipwreck to dig into his brain and possibly fry his brain. So, Joel, we're going to commercial with a fried brain Shipwreck.
Today's file card features on the G.I. Joe Marine, codenamed Gung Ho. His file name is Etienne R. Lafitte. His primary military specialty is Rakondo, and his secondary military specialty is Jungle Warfare Training Instructor. His birthplace is Fer de Lance, Louisiana, and he is a grade E7 sergeant. Born into a large back swamp Cajun clan, Gung Ho moved to New Orleans and won a reputation as a bare knuckle brawler and knife fighter to be reckoned with. He joined the Marines at 18 and graduated top of his class from boot camp at Paris Island. He attended Airborne School, Rakondo School, and Marine Ordnance School. He can low crawl through the nastiest black water, stinking mud, and bubbling slime for a week with half his body covered in leeches and the other half raw with bug bites, and still make an 0700 inspection formation with polished brass, spit shine shoes, razor creases, and a mean look in his eye. That's a Marine. He's a qualified expert with all NATO infantry, small arms, and most Warsaw Pact infantry weapons. And most importantly, the XM-76 grenade launcher. Zap says, all Marines are crazy, but Gung Ho's the hairiest, scariest, craziest jarhead that ever scratched, kicked, and bit his way out of that hole in the swamp they call Paris Island. First off, Joe and Joe listeners, I apologize for taking this long to get to one of my favorite Joes ever. Completely slipped under the radar. Gung Ho is amazing. The original shirtless wonder, take that quick kick. Gung Ho's always great for not only comedy relief, but also for actual military support on the show. Whenever Gung Ho shows up, he takes it serious and he punches the lights out. He's the straight man, really, in most situations. Who can forget when we met his family and his family alone without the Joe's assistance, scared off Cobra in the Deep South. I also love that his second figure were his dress blues. They put a figure out of Gung Ho in his Marine dress blues, which was fantastic. It seemed like a good honor to the soldiers that they were embodying. And so it's Etienne R. Lafitte, you shirtless maniac. We salute you and applaud.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
Because they're trying real hard to get that secret out of his brain. So he's seeing all these ghosts, like faces of Destro and Baroness and Cobra Commander. And
this cadet, she is getting down.
Cadet Demi is amazing. I don't know if the, I feel
his,
like
his fake wife is not going to like that.
No, but you know what's funny about his fake wife? One of the reasons I wanted you on this episode is her name's Mira, and she was previously introduced in an episode where Shipwreck helped liberate a Cobra base. They were doing experiments on their own soldiers, and in the experiments, they turned people into mer people.
Oh.
Yeah, and so that's why cool. I thought you'd be great to be on this one. We've done that episode already, but Mira is a merperson that's out there living in this world. And they fell in love. She and Shipwreck fell in love. She was a Cobra soldier, but she
reverted. She realized Cobra was bad and helped the Joes stop that particular plan. But when they go to Springfield here in this fantasy world of his, they give him Mira as his wife.
Ah.
And they address it early on in the first episode. He says, you can breathe. Like, you're out of water. Like, what's up? And she goes, oh, doctors cured me of that. But in reality, she is swimming around in the Joe universe right now. Somewhere as a merperson.
Still viable? Yeah.
They couldn't get any of the details out of Shipwreck. Cobra Commander's very upset.
Would take such a precaution. The sailor is useless to us without
Lady. We also got a cool moment earlier before the commercial break of Shipwreck's origin story. And he's one of the few Joes that actually we got fleshed out a lot of origin with over the course of the series. Mm-hmm. So early on, when we first meet him, pre-G.I. Joe, he's a merchant marine. And that's literally like it's in the second or third miniseries. I think it was the second miniseries. He's a merchant marine hanging out in the desert, which they used a clip of in this. And he meets the Joes and he helps them, helps stop Cobra's plans, and then decides, okay, I'll join G.I. Joe. And then in another episode, they introduced the concept of his nephew, and that his nephew was adopted, and they say that Shipwreck was adopted growing up, and he grew up near the San Diego shipyards. And then on this episode, we got even more of his background. They showed how he grew up, and they showed that he, you know, joined the Navy, and he traveled the world, and he did all this crazy cool stuff. I think we know more about Shipwreck than we do about any other Joe. Is according to the cartoon.
Escalapian.
I do wish they would have given us the origin of Polly, though. Polly's his parrot that talks, and I love Polly. I think some people think Polly's silly. But I kind of want to know when he met Polly.
Why, we'll have the answer. Why do the twins speak even I didn't together?
You mean all twins don't do that? That's not a normal thing?
Oh, he's speaking on himself. They're just finishing each other's sentences.
Yeah, they finish each other's sentences. Yeah, it's a thing. The only difference is the scar, and they have opposing uniforms. So like they, you know, like one has the high collar on the right, the other has the high collar on the left. They finish each other's sentences, and they also feel each other's pain.
Real twins do that.
Yeah. So if Roadblock punches Tomax, Zaymot curls up in terror. You know, they actually used it as a radar system in one episode because one of them was kidnapped by the Joes, and he purposely caused himself a bunch of pain so that the other one would feel it from across the world. And they were able to say, oh, the Joes are in this direction. And they tracked the Joes down because the pain his brother was purposely causing himself.
My beard.
So Shipwreck just washed his beard off. And by that, I don't mean he got rid of his wife. I mean, he cleaned his beard. And it turns out he's not gray hair, Joel.
What's up, sailor?
And Polly, wait a minute. Polly's like, what are you doing? Gray, Polly's kind of like, don't go down this route.
What about her?
Shh. Somebody's coming.
Time for our evening glass of milk, Mr.
So Shipwreck
Delgado.
Knows something's up. Who brings you a warm glass of milk at night? Who wants...
Thanks, lady.
I feel like as an adult...
Wait a minute.
Milk is the last thing I ever want.
No, thanks.
Did you agree with that?
Well, she would really check with him to see if he's lactose intolerant.
Well, that's true. Oh, this is the 80s. I don't think people cared about it then. I mean, it happened, but I don't think they cared.
No peanut allergies
in
the
80s. Yeah, they definitely didn't care about it.
He's forcing her to have the milk.
Just forced this nurse. So he's at Springfield General Hospital. And here comes through the window.
Drink another, that milk.
Look at this. There's another Polly there.
Oh.
And the other Polly is carrying like what looks like a small flash camera. And boom, he shines a light. And the Polly that we had been watching for the last episode and a half.
Oh,
melts into
goo.
Polly's a synthoid.
Oh no.
So good.
Drink that milk, biatch.
Yeah. He drowns her in milk and she immediately passes out. So this is great. So it's no longer a horror movie. This is the escape man. Now it's got to get out of Springfield, you know? And it's through the perspective of Cobra.
Cobra.
S-C-E-T-S.
Let me guess. Cobra salvaged me and the
shark. They were having an automated computer run through every word of the Oxford Dictionary to try to find the... Oh, that nurse just changed her hair color completely, by the way. She went from being a brunette now she's laying in bed. She's
and
a blonde.
All of this, the hospital, the whole town.
So the computer was reading, and in his subconscious, the computer was reading every word in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And Cobra Commander had a great one line against it. Like, oh, this is... It's great to know that your scheme's going to fail 6 years before it fails.
And Cobra's trying to get me to reveal Mulaney's secret formula. But Lady J's the only one who knows the blasted code word.
I love what so they just did there. Is
Mara lied to me. She's just, on Cobra's side.
This is great. Shipwreck just played the role of narrator for all of us watching. Mm-hmm. To, you know, like in case
exposition.
Yeah, in case like you're a kid and you're, you know, you maybe didn't see the first episode. I mean, you're trying to understand like why were there two Pollys? Why was this?
We're Shipwreck just did that for you. If it kills us.
But because he's talking to his buddy, you're like, oh, okay. Because Polly wasn't there. Polly's got to be filled in. Have you ever written talking animals?
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Lots of talking.
Okay, so we're going to commercial. We're going to find out more about talking animals when we come back.
Okay, Hawk, it's operational.
Like taking candy from a baby.
Get the shuttle complex ready for launch. 2, 1. We have liftoff. We're separating from the booster. And Joe needs help. We got him. Now let's get Cobra. Yo, Joe.
Be a real American hero.
Follow the adventures of G.I. Joe in Marvel Comics.
Go, Joe!
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So what show did you work on talking animals with?
But if you ask me, it's a brainwash.
Sonic, I guess? Would Sonic count?
What I tell you?
They're animals.
Sonic's, I guess, more anthropomorphized.
Yeah.
I don't think people see him like as a real hedgehog.
Right.
But in the Secret Saturdays had the cryptids.
Right,
we
right, right.
We possess almost total control over this material. Now, whereas a milk...
Finkerton, who is kind of like the monkey, he was like a... They called him a gorilla cat, but he's like a giant monkey.
Awesome.
Played by Diedrich Bader.
Oh, awesome. He's done a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Drew Carey Show and, you know, the Beverly Hills movie and Office Space. And what's it?
Invader Zim.
Oh, yeah, Invader Zim. But he was also Batman.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he was Batman in an amazing iteration. Brave and the Bold is such a good cartoon. It's so great. Like, I could see why it definitely had a shorter lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it was for what they did. They squeezed every ounce of it out of that show. Yeah, I love that show. Oh, that's amazing. Shipwreck is breaking into the... He's going through all the Cobra labs and he just dropped a bunch of...
And there are killer paper airplanes.
Yeah. Cobra scientists are testing killer paper airplanes. A serum dropped on a scientist's hair and it melted his hair.
They're not trying to cure AIDS.
No.
In the 80s.
Absolutely. The serum melted the guy's hair, which I got. And those were by Steve Gerber, who wrote, it was a big comic book guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to hope that was an homage to Lex Luthor losing his hair from Superboy in a lab accident. And if it wasn't, I'm going to say that it was.
Operation
but Polly knew
water.
What the secret formula was.
Oh.
Polly knew what it was because Polly was there
mm-hmm.
with Lady J. And so we're going to find out right now.
Code word, frogs in winter. Frogs in winter.
Frogs in winter.
Could you imagine how long it would have taken a computer to get around to say the phrase frogs in winter?
Potassium triglyceride.
Like, I don't think Cobra Commander was wrong. I think 6 years is a good estimate. That it would have taken.
The secret.
So Shipwreck's going to play scientist, and now he's going to make this. Now, what this was for you first time, in case you didn't see the first
Don't
episode.
Drink it, Swabby.
Mulaney's,
why would he drink random
things? Wow, he's a parrot, you know. this is a great shot, by the way. That's like all the dirt balls of Cobra all gathered. Dreadnoks and Cobra Commander and Destro and Zartan.
I know what this stuff can do, see? It turns water into an explosive, and I just set it loose in your drainage.
And that's good writing, so you're not relying on people remembering what it was. It's he's got to remind the viewers, this is what it does.
That match will do nothing.
And that's you're great. Bluffing. Testro's like,
am I?
Yeah, I think
this is a great moment.
Are.
Check this out. Shipwreck drops the match down the sink, and nothing happens, because Destro said it needs a bigger catalyst.
And nobody listened to Destro.
Right.
They're like,
right.
Out of here.
Yeah, they don't trust Destro.
No.
Except you have Dreadnoks, who are the dumbest people in all of G.I. Joe. they shoot at where he was, and they then ignite the explosive. So it's fantastic.
Flint, so Destro's like, I told you.
Yeah. Destro's the most competent Cobra.
Yeah.
And he is always surrounded by these fools and buffoons.
Yeah.
Always.
So he must just be...
He's so upset. He's so upset.
Yeah.
So we find out that the Joes did find Professor Mulaney. They did not dishevel him. He's very still disheveled.
Now you go below.
Let's give the guy a razor. Cut the ZZ Top beard already, you guys.
You will do something. He is a kook. Though,
I think we get a good rhyme.
Shucks, we may do a couple of things.
Oh, we did just get a good, got a good rhyme from Roadblock. Roadblock likes to rhyme on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's very endearing. So the explosion that Shipwreck called was basically like a flare to the Joes, who were in the area and on the USS Flag aircraft carrier. So Shipwreck just blew up an entire town. It's like he hit the gas line that just the whole town exploded.
Mara, Althea.
And this is actually an emotional moment right here.
Mara, in the living room, Hector.
So Shipwreck's going to get Mara because as far as he knows, that's really Mara because she was a Cobra soldier.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could have been that she joined Cobra again, but he still loves her.
So now his kid found his RPG.
I know, right?
Mara, don't!
And there goes his true best friend.
Oh, no.
Mara and his daughter.
My wife is a pile of goo.
My wife is a pile of goo. That was the fourth chapter in my autobiography. Yeah, so Shipwreck just watched his wife, the love of his life, turn into a pile of goo. The woman who we never thought he would be reunited with.
We thought we'd lost you. Shipwreck?
They don't know. They don't know what he went through. Well,
was there something important in that house?
Nah, nothing important. Just a dream or two.
Oh!
Come
Are
on.
You kidding
Let's
me?
Let's go home.
Joel, this is how you end the first season of G.I. Joe on such an emotional moment. I love it.
That is so sad.
I love it. That was it. That was like, that's why this show is so great. Because they go out on emotion. They didn't go out on a big bang. They didn't go out on, you know, hey, we won the day. It was, this is a character piece. And this character piece is about this dude who found love, who thought he found it again, and now realized he's got to go back to fighting the war. How great is that? How great is that? I love this show so much. So that's it, Joelle. You just watched your first episode of G.I. Joe. So what'd you think?
It was very cool. Yeah, I clearly don't know who any of the characters are or their backstories. But I do like people turning into goo.
People turning into goo is always good.
And talking parrots also.
Talking
always
parrots.
Good.
Well, Joelle, thank you so much for being a guest on Joe and Joe.
Thanks for having me.
I was very happy to have you on. Get her book called Myrrh by Joelle Selner and Abby Bohr. And find her at writtenbyjoelle.com or you can get her on Twitter at whereisjoelle, J-O-E-L-L-E. Find me at Joe and Joe Pod. And remember, now you Joe. And Joeing is half the battle.